the three marks of existence, three lakshana. Anicca, anattam, dukkha. Impermanence, non-self, unsatisfactoriness. So we spoke of this yesterday, mostly focusing on anicca, the ongoing change, the impermanence, which is, as the sixth ancestor says, exactly Buddha nature. Of course, these are just three facets of our life that we are from the beginning, and yet if we misconstrue them, then they become what results in suffering, unsatisfactoriness, all sorts of harm and troubles that we create. So the Buddha emphasizes, and all the ancestors emphasize, clarifying these matters or different facets of these matters. So today, want to clarify a little more this anattam, this non-self. Of course, doesn't need to be clarified. As great master Matsu says, truth is not something that is in need to be cultivated. It's just that you must not defile it. By what is it defiled? By the tendency being preoccupied with life and death, continuously making up things. By that, it is defiled. And what does he mean by making up things? That's exactly what, when we say caught in self-centered dream, grasping, attaching, holding, is making up self or making up other. Doesn't make a difference, because when we make up other, grasping this moment and believing something about he, she, should, shouldn't, they, it, or about me. Different facets of the same thing. I shouldn't feel this way. This isn't supposed to happen to me. This isn't supposed to seem this way, despite the fact that over and over ancestors remind us, what you now see, hear, realize, know is from the very outset your original nature. It is also known as original mind, and apart from this mind, no other Buddha. So says Matsu somewhere else. It's this that we emphasize when we say caught in self-centered dream. We so take it for granted that we get into trouble and look all over for what the source of the trouble is. We look all over because we think, believe, the way it is not okay. That's the grasping. That's the attaching, which is why I say, notice, we emphasize noticing the attaching, because that's the moment and the opportunity to see, what you're doing, where and how self is being created. Where and how self is being created, not in order to figure out something about it, but so that we can, in a sense, forget the self, as Dogen Zenji says, in order to study the Buddha way. It's studying this self-creating, not that there's a self fixed, permanent, separate, but we insist that there is. We insist that there is, therefore we need to see where and how we are creating it over and over, and it in a sense creates itself. The habit of self-centeredness creates itself, but it only creates itself right now. Right now, therefore, right now is where our practice is, if you want to say. Right now is where being, experiencing, allows self to forget itself, allows us to forget self, to be awakened. Or another way Dogen says, study the backwards step of turning, it's sort of double translated here. The backward step of turning back the light and shining it inward. Or you could translate it, tracing it radiance. Body, mind will then drop away of themselves, and original face appears. Myriad dharmas awaken this moment that is our life, if we say it that way. Many ways to encourage us to do what? To be right where we are, to be this no separate, this no fixed, no permanent, no thing, if I say it in a clumsy way. See? To allow the releasing of this grasping that makes self of this moment circumstance. See? Of this moment circumstance. Upright sitting is the experiencing that, if I make it more elaborate, the natural grasping, or the seemingly natural grasping of itself, can open right here. The mind chatter of itself can quiet. Or we could say it another way, of itself be transparent or disappear in the midst of whole body breathing. That's not something fancy. Your whole body always breathes. Our whole body always breathes. We just want to make this story of how and what it is. So out of non-self we make all sorts of self. Out of interdependence into being, we make separate things, which is fine as a way of talking about it, but it's not fine if it becomes how we believe and perceive who and what we are. See? So forgetting self is being just this, is in one sense, if I say it, it's getting out of your head, getting out of your body, and the way to get out is to get in. Get in means experiencing, means being right here. Because then out and in aren't the way we think of them. We forget self, we forget others. Then we see there's nowhere to go, no need to go anywhere, because right now here, or again, as Matsu says, what you now see, hear, realize, know is from the very outset, from the very outset. Your original nature, if you want to use fancy words, your Buddha nature. There's no Buddha separate from right here, or separate from mind. No such thing as Buddha here, mind there. No such thing. There's no mind separate from Buddha. So it's this grasping that seems so natural, and yet when that is our reactive habit, we believe self, we believe permanence, or we at least seek permanence, and therefore what we get is unsatisfactoriness and suffering, and that's causes harming. That is what the Buddha emphasizes, that he wants us to clarify so that we can be this joyousness that we are. Not grasping whether it's so-called good or so-called bad, what I so-called want or what I so-called don't want. It's the grasping and the attaching. And we start becoming familiar with this habit as we sit, in whatever the particular form of our sitting is, as we are present, whether in formal zazen, where the form supports us to clarify this, or in all the other activities of our day. The form is an aid. In a way, the form is the whole of it. There isn't something else. And yet, it's all the myriad forms of our life are the forms of zazen, the forms of upright sitting. See? The forms of non-thinking. As you probably know, Dogen quotes Yakusan, who says, sit solidly like a rock. But of course, exactly the way you sit is sitting, or sometimes they use the word immovable sitting. Sometimes the Chinese is translated into those words in English. And You could look at the Chinese characters, but it's the grounded presence. And that is, of course, manifested in all our functioning. That's our opportunity. So this grasping is something that we all know and take as natural, and yet it's exactly what we need to become familiar with, because it's the, if I say it, the antidote. Not that we need an antidote, yet we do need one. It's not that we lack anything, it's just we, as we might say, need not to defile what is undefilable. Grasping is just grasping, and yet if we grasp grasping, then we're in trouble. Our thinking, feeling, all the other, even the so-called self-concerns, are just coming, going. And yet we, because we're human, we have the ability to resist this. We have the ability to entangle ourselves in it. Therefore, despite the fact there's nowhere to go, no one to go, no need to go, we need to do what's valuable for us, so that of itself, this self idea drops off or is forgotten. Better forgotten. Forgotten means it wasn't there, or it's not here, or it doesn't impinge on our being where we are. It doesn't impinge on our joyousness to add that paint of unsatisfactoriness to the present moment, to add that tinge of suffering to what is occurring, because that's what Buddha wants to offer us, to assist us, to assist us. Then our original purity is pure right now, if I use such words, purity. So, just as you are, just as everyone you meet is, just that is Buddha. Whatever way you take that, it allows us to not have to hold on to and solidify the self of so-called other or the self of so-called self. And if we don't solidify that, then we don't have to generate that poison from it. Okay. Since I talked about this yesterday, we began clarifying this. I want to stop now and we can clarify further this fundamental point, or these fundamental points, because that's the only reason to bring this up. No need for the Buddha to talk, and yet there's lots of need, because we make all sorts of troubles. We make all sorts of troubles. Or And that's whether Dogen, whether Matsu, whether other ancestors, that's what they're bringing forth for us. No need to expand effort. The vehicle of the ancestors is right here, already. Fundamentally speaking, the truth is all-encompassing of our life, and our life doesn't mean so-called mine, but our, of course it's so-called mine, and so-called yours, and so-called everyone you encounter. It can't be defiled. And yet, despite there being no need to seek, we need to do our part. So, okay. If you want to change your position, you can. And let's see if there's something you wish to clarify further. Yes.
When I think about clarifying, I immediately feel like I'm defiling the with words and thoughts and grasping
well,
this other stuff.
If there's nothing that you need to clarify, wonderful.
But I still don't completely, really see through all. I mean, all
what? What don't you?
Well, just this when I start to think of it, there's some kind of grasping. And,
Where's the grasping?
Trying to get a hold of it, trying to...
What is it you're trying to get a hold of? It's who you are.
Yeah.
What is it? See, that's important, to notice when you're trying to get a hold of something. I don't mean... We're not talking about some, external thing or some even internal thing. It's just the very functioning of siren coming, going. Where is there anything that results in unsatisfactoriness?
When I just even begin to look at something, that I notice happening, then immediately some idea, some thought, some kind of theory almost immediately comes up.
Good.
About that.
Good.
And then I thought, well, that's not right. And that, well, I just tripped myself over it.
So, right there, if that's the mental process that occurs, right there is the opportunity, if we say it. If you want to say, turn, look, who's being tripped up. Turn that light inward, if you want to say. Or turn it and look, who's saying I'm tripped up. But this is more... it's a little bit abstract, but this is more the point when this occurs in your daily functioning or when this occurs in the midst of sitting non-thinking. When body-mind appear in the midst of just this moment. There's nothing that you need to do except when you believe that that's not so. except when you notice the holding of grasping. And I do it physically because we can feel it viscerally, maybe not with the hands, but we could sense viscerally when we're grasping, reacting to events so-called inside or so-called outside. There is our opportunity, because in a sense, if I talk about it in this way, grasping hinders experiencing. Not that grasping and experiencing are two, but holding to the grasping or to the caught upness hinders the experiencing of the very grasping. Because we humans are good at making two and three and four of it. Or, as we said yesterday, making a dream and not knowing it's a dream. That's why the Buddha says, like a dream, like a dewdrop, consider it. Then you know what it is. You wouldn't try to grasp a dream that you know is a dream. And yet we try.
I find that going on almost all the time. Sometimes okay. I don't notice it, that's not really a problem.
Okay, so when you don't notice it, there's nothing to do. But when you notice it, there's something to do. And noticing it and making whatever's appropriate effort enables it to be noticed sooner, or enables it to cease of itself, to drop off of itself, to become dissipated and transparent of itself. Because the arising of grasping is just habits, and habits just come of themselves. You know, it's like having a spring, and the spring keeps unwinding at different momentum. So it just unwinds and appears, and unwinds and appears. You don't have to, don't get an idea there's some spring somewhere that you have to attend to, but it does appear in this ongoing change, as which is the interdependence of cause and effect. All sorts of cause and effect manifesting right now. We don't have to figure out how they're interrelated. We don't have to go trace where and what and how and when. But we do know what's now, and therefore now is where we experience, or now is where we are caught up and making self of non-self, making permanence or wishing for permanence or wishing for non-permanence. So it's another way. I don't want this. This shouldn't be here. This should have been gone by now. How come I still have to put up with this? Whatever the this is, whether it's your neighbor, friend acting in a certain way, a relative who doesn't stop, or whether it's our own habits of, and you fill in whatever the habit is, or our own bodily conditions. I shouldn't be aching this way. I didn't used to ache this way. How come? I used to be able to hear well. How come I don't hear so well anymore? I used to be able to see well. I was stronger, or whatever. Or, haha, look, I can do it better than he, she can. In a way, it's very simple. One practice is simply to clarify moment where the three marks of existence are arising. How, when they're arising. That means being present, and all of a sudden seeing. Arising of self, arising of other. But as I said, all of these are facets of the same reality life that we are right now. So it's not that there's these things somewhere out there. It's facets of our functioning, which are no problem except when they become a problem. I can't always see, so I have to turn.
It seems like one of the values of sitting for a long period of time is you get to see the consequence of that.
Mm.
You get to feel the consequence of it.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have to be talked into dropping it because mm-hmm. it's miserable
mm-hmm.
to hold on to it, and you just it's a lot of impetus to let it go.
Yeah.
Who cares why? Because when you decide you're going to do something like this, unless you just get up and leave, which occurs to me regularly, you sort of naturally
mm-hmm.
let go of things. Because it's yeah. otherwise an afternoon of hell.
Yeah. That's why it's forgetting self or dropping away. But we, as you said, it can occur to us to leave, and we could leave without leaving by checking out for periods of time, whether in a daydream or whether in mind chatter or in upset about certain conditions or...
But that seems to just make it worse.
Makes sense, except when it feels the way it does, you and the habit of checking out asserts itself. It sometimes asserts itself and checks out before we even know that we've checked out, till we discover, oh, I've been off in da-da-da-da-da about da-da-da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but when you
make it, the saying it makes it worse has never stopped anyone from doing things that are problematic behavior.
Oh no. It does seem though like if you check out for a while,
uh-huh.
the consequences of which you will eventually not uncheck out, and then, oh, you've got this shitstorm on your hand.
Uh-huh.
And so it doesn't, just the habit of sitting, just the practice of sitting for a long time doesn't really encourage you after you try a few tricks. and then it's worse when you wake up to the tricks.
Uh-huh.
You just naturally sort of, you don't have to be talked into it or reasoned into it or whatever.
Yeah.
You just, let me find something that's not going to kill me. And what's not going to kill me is just letting things go.
Yes. Yes. We sometimes, as you say, try a few tricks. And trying a few tricks sometimes can mean 5 days, 5 years, or 10 years, or 20 years of trying tricks, or more. Because everyone wants to be free of suffering, of unsatisfactoriness of harm, but the tricks that we try often are, if I use the word, counterproductive, because that we want to make self of non-self and guaranteed not to work. We want to make permanence of ongoing change. We want to make separate fixedness as of something that's interbeing, interdependent, ongoing change. So it seems to work for a little bit and then it doesn't. So we grasp something else and we create another dream, and then it works a little bit and then fortunately it ceases to work.
And when it ceases to work, often the circumstance is worse than
yes.
the one you were trying to get away from, the sore back, okay, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then your trick gets you into embroiled about sore back, and now you're tense everywhere.
To pick a simple, straightforward one, in a way, that's wonderful part of sesshin and of sitting, is that it's so simple and straightforward. It doesn't have the entanglements and extendedness that we do it in our life, because there's so few options and there's so little that's called for that you could play with when you're sitting upright, still, breathing. It's too bare to have too much to fiddle with, and yet we can populate that with all sorts of fiddling. But what's important to know is that throughout our life, from beginning to end, is what at least Matsu and Dogen, both the ancestors that I cited from, were saying. From beginning to, from morning to night, our whole life, Joko and the Buddha all saying, it's really simple and straightforward in all our life. And yet we entangle. We humans do that. And if we can't find it one place, we'll find it another place. Whether it's with our family or with a sports team or with... name the topic, name the area where you want to go do it, and you figure out where grasping self-centeredness is going to get me what I want, whatever it is, which means get me other than being right here now.
It seems like a problem I've always had is sesshin is relatively easy.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I said, you're pretty much cornered as long as you go along with it. You're cornered into seeing what's going on.
Uh-huh.
The minute I leave sesshin and I'm not cornered, back to the old business.
Yes, except hopefully what the clarification and energy of sesshin enables you to see what's called for when the old business reappears. But of course, you have to create the forms and the supports within your, quote, old business life, not to continue the old business. Because, we could stay in sesshin for 10 days instead of 5, but then you still leave. And then it's up to you to, in a sense, expand sesshin, not by sticking to this form, but to expand this fundamental sesshin mind, if we say it that way, the unified mind, if I use that kind of word, that we are, to other aspects of our life, to other functionings of our life, to the life of the beings that we encounter, because it is who they are. See, it's not that you have to make something else where it isn't. It already is that way. See? What you see, hear, realize, know is from the outset your original nature. Your doesn't mean your personal. It means our original nature. Meaning what you see here in after session is that too. Except when we grasp, when we attach, when we get caught up and believe that habit. See, it's the habit of caughting up, catching up, grasping, whichever way it is, and we each have it in our own way. And that's, see, when as we sit or as we practice in various forms, we start to viscerally sense it when it occurs. That's when the opportunity, if you want to say, turning back. That's when the opportunity of this non-thinking embracing that. That intimacy of being present, be embracing that grasping. So the grasping no longer functions as grasping problem at problem. It's a grasping releasing, if I say it that way. It's a studying self that forgets the self and gets awoken. Gets awoken by exactly what we're grasping at in a particular way. Because it's nothing but our original faith. See? And what does Dogen say? This goes on endlessly. I don't know. I don't think. But I shouldn't say what he says because, as I keep emphasizing, it's a translation into English. So whatever word we use is fine to use. But as soon as we hold on to that word, we add on all the connotations in English. So, for instance, this translation, traceless awakening continued on and on endlessly. Of course, then we, what does that mean? What does it mean when if we translate it as traceless? This is from Genjo Koan, and Genjo Koan's in Japanese, not in Chinese. So it's when you, how to translate it in a way so that we don't get trapped by the English words. Forgetting oneself, we think, there's some self I've got to forget. We get in trouble. But still, we use language because it supports and nurtures us. As long as we're not used by the language, it's great. See? It's said that after the Buddha's enlightenment, he spent an extended period continuing sitting. And at first, he thought that there's no way he could share this. And then he decided to share it. Then there's various ways that the Buddha's awakening, if I use that word, and enlightenment is articulated. And the three marks of existence is one fundamental way, the Trilakshana. In Sanskrit, or the three aspects of life, is one way to articulate what life is and what enables us to be this, if I say joyousness, this true nature, if I use such words, that we are, rather than be misconstruing it because of our wanting impermanence to be permanent or wanting self out of non-self or wanting satisfaction in particular conditions and things rather than seeing that those particular conditions, things, moments are nothing but in ongoing change, non-self, not separate. Okay, let's see if anyone has. Yes.
I have a question, but I don't know exactly how to phrase it.
Okay.
It seems like in our society, anyway, people are supposed to have a really strong sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
But then we talk about no self. Like people, you know, have strong opinions and hold on to this and hold on to that. By gosh, this is the way it's going to be.
So in a way, I sometimes like to say non-self by saying not fixed, permanent, and separate. So now already I'm elaborating. So I'm adding, but that gives us a little flavor to say, sure, you could say, I am, I want this, I don't want this, no thank you, but if it's fixed, we get into trouble with it. If we see it's not fixed, not separate, so yeah, today I'll have that. I know yesterday I said I wanted vanilla, but today chocolate's fine. Sure, that's what you've got. Wonderful. Thank you very much. No, I will not have chocolate. Didn't I tell you yesterday I need to have vanilla? I need vanilla. Me, now. That's fixed, permanent, and separate. Oh. Separate means that it's all interdependent into being, and therefore what happens in one manifests how it is in all the others. So yesterday I was strong, but today for some reason I didn't sleep all night and I'm weary and I'm not strong. And if I get upset that I'm not strong today and I can't do this, then I'm in trouble. But if I recognize that, you know, I didn't sleep and my body's aching and maybe I've got a little temperature or what, so I'm weak. Okay, that's the way this moment is now. But this is these are simple examples of the how, in a way, this is all pervasive throughout our life and the life of all that we encounter. Other people, other beings, other so-called things. And we, as you say, keep insisting. Not that you shouldn't say, be able to say, I want this, I don't want this, no thank you for this. But if we hold on to it where it's inappropriate, if we use it as a battering ram, whether to batter ourselves or others, then we got harm and suffering. Dogen Zenji says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. That means that's exactly where you see the practice, the clarification, not in some theories or books, but in this functioning of whether your so-called self or so-called others. It's in this moment functioning and your reactions, responses to circumstances. Of course, one way to deal with the impermanence is to say, no, I'll make myself even stronger. I didn't build a strong enough fort last time. This time I'm going to get a stronger fort and make a stronger self. Then I won't have to deal with getting weak. I'll make sure I, you know, do what needs to be done and I'll never have a weak day. So we do all sorts of things. Some people, for instance, would say, okay, I'm going to take drugs to make sure I get a good night's sleep. And then when I wake up, well, I need to take some other kind of drug to make sure I wake up. Then I'll be strong, and then I need some extra steroids or anabolic steroids or other things to make myself really perform great. And so on and so forth. Those are other ways we can respond and react and get in trouble and get entangled with the ongoing change that is exactly our life, that is exactly the circumstances where there is no fixed, permanent, separate. People have done that for millennia, and people have gotten into trouble for millennia for doing that, and we can see that. Remember, the Buddha was talking to people 2,500 years ago in somewhere on the subcontinent of India. So those people had these same issues because they were people. Because they lived in this universe, even though it's changing, it's still this universe that we live in. And Matsu, known in Japanese as Basso, Master Matsu, was in China about 1300 years ago, maybe 1400 years ago, anyway, exact dates. So he was in Tang Dynasty, and Dogen Zenji was in Japan about 900 years ago. Yeah. So, and he's in another culture. So this is humans. Each culture does it in its own way and has its own issues. So we don't have to worry about that we won't find ways to do it in our culture. And we need to do it based on how we manifest these aspects. So they're clarifying, in a way, the fundamental points, and yet we have to refine it for our practice and our life. And each of us here, it's easy, as Monshin said, we're all sitting in sesshin and the form supports us, and then we get the wonderful opportunity in other aspects of our life with other people, some of whom are clear about their practicing and others are less clear about their practicing. Everyone we meet is practicing in some form, whether they know it or not, because they're dealing with what? They're dealing with impermanence. They're dealing with fear, greed, anger, confusion, death, as we talked about. They're dealing with these facets of life, ongoing change, and their reactions, their grasping, and what the results are. So, okay?
Okay. See you tomorrow, man.
Yes.
I'm thinking about, well, Hildegard von Bingen was about the same time as Dogen, all right?
Yes, in Europe.
And mystic and so on. She was a very strong woman.
Uh-huh.
She told off the popes. I mean, she took sort of what you're talking about, it seems to me, which is, there are times in your life, at least they've been in my life, when I have to be very strong about something.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking about Meadowbrook and Ruth Lorba, and I fought them for 2 years to get her a private room, and I had to really become, you know, yeah, aggressive to get it. But you do it.
And you, for instance, you're in at the Meadowbrook, the
nursing
home. Yeah. I didn't know which one. Maybe when you're talking in with this particular administrator, you need to be aggressive. But if you step out of that administrator's office and you go down and you're with the nursing, if we're holding on to that aggressiveness with the next nurse, then we get in trouble.
Yeah.
But we do that sometimes because we get caught. See, that's the point that when we talk about in four practice principles, we're talking about the caught and holding, where these habits become a power of themselves. In fact, much of what we see of reactiveness is that it goes on automatically, which is fine, except when we're using it in the wrong place. If we're using the hammer to put the nail back into this wooden floor, it's great. But if I have to open this window and I use the hammer, well, I don't have to tell you further what's going to happen with the window. So yeah, fine. Use it and put it down. And we discover where we're using habits that sometimes we didn't even know we had. Where did that come from? Where did those thoughts, reaction, how did that show up? I'm just sitting here quietly and all of a sudden sometimes it's visceral, physical, sometimes it's mental. And thoughts, not that they're two, it's all. I mean, we talk about the five skandhas as one way to help us clarify these different aspects of being alive, or we could say being human, because it clarifies five different aspects for us to practice with: form, sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness, to clarify our functioning. Well, if we say 3 or 4 or 5 or 10, these are just forms to enable us to live this formless form that is our life, this form of no form. Then we can be where we are, which is exactly right here. This very place is the lotus land of purity. This very body is the body of the Buddha. So says Hakuin Zenji in Zazen Wasen, Song of Zazen. Last chance if someone wants to bring up something. Okay. Thank you.